What a classic song that is. Histrionics time on RN Drive. From one classic to another today, we're going back to 1990. Actually, that very comparison is ridiculous, and you'll find out why. 1990, this is the time when hip-hop was hip-hop, and it was really serious. Some of it sounded a bit like this. It's a thing called Contract on the World Love Jam. It's from possibly the greatest hip-hop album ever recorded. I don't know if Jonathan Ellie's going to agree with me. It's called Fear of a Black Planet, Public Enemy. Any way you look at it, it's a classic. It has so much to tell us about a time, a place, and about politics. And Jonathan is here to tell us about it. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure, as always.
Do you dispute?
In terms of social impact, no. In terms of production, no. In terms of songs, yes.
Huh, okay.
Okay.
I'd love to continue that debate, but frankly, I'm not qualified to have it. It's just my real reason for backing out.
I think the first two Public Enemy records, Yo Bum Ross has shown it takes a nation
of millions to hold us back, yes?
Correct. Thank you. More musically accomplished than Fear of a Black Planet. But in terms of the sheer impact Fear of a Black Planet had on society and the sense of complete urban paranoia that's created in the production, it's a milestone.
Well, you could just hear in that very start. So that's at the start of the album. Mm. You just hear there already the use of the scratching is de rigueur. That's common. Sure. But the use of the samples, immediately you're being transported to a world of activism, aren't you?
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
But it's not just a world of activism. To me, Fear of a Black Planet had such an impact. I mean, it joins a coterie of artists that's really pretty small in terms of the impact the album had on society. You could probably put it in there with what? The Beatles, The Clash and the Sex Pistols, Bob Marley and Nirvana. Really? Mm-hmm. And not too many more. Mm-hmm. Why? All right, well, hip-hop in the late 80s in America still was very much about the place it was coming from. It was about, I'm from Cypress Hill, I'm from Brooklyn, I'm from Compton. Fear of a Black Planet was a very New York-centric album, no doubt about that, but it addressed a question which is completely globally relevant and still is, which is how the issues of race and colour and culture are manipulated by the media or by the powers that be, by governments, to essentially say, well, colour's an issue and we're going to create and concoct that to take advantage of people of various characteristics. For our benefit.
So it was a critique of a structural form of racism.
Correct.
This is the thing. It's not just about someone call me a nasty name. This is about much bigger ideas to do with war and pop culture and entertainment. This idea that white supremacy is not something that exists in the minds of the Ku Klux Klan, but exists in the practice of everyday power politics.
Well, in the military industrial complex,
yeah,
basically, is where it's coming from. Mm. The sort of seeds of it are interesting in that Public Enemy had a group member called Professor Griff. Before this record was made, he gave an interview, and it's never been clear whether he was quoted out of context, whether he was misquoted, but the quote that ended up in the paper was, Jewish people are responsible for the majority of evil in the world. Whoops. Mm. It got him thrown out of the group. Mm.
Which I should point out is not an uncommon thing to have come from some of the black supremacist movements in the US in the decades leading up to that.
No, it's certainly within context that way, but it doesn't make it a necessarily acceptable thing to say, particularly when you're coming from the viewpoint of equality the Public Enemy was supposedly coming from. Mm. He was later reinstated and, you know, apologized for the comments and has always claimed that it was some form of beat up aimed at the group right at the time they were trying to get a major label record deal.
But they did, with Fear of a Black Planet, Professor Griff was no longer with them.
Correct.
At that point.
But the furor that that had created set off within Chuck D's mind, who's the leader of the group and the lyricist, the whole question of how race relations are treated by the mainstream media in America.
Right.
And that's the kind of dominant through line of the album. Mm. So to me, I mean, there are a number of examples on the record. Polly Wanacracker dealt with sexism in the hip-hop community, which is an interesting thing in itself. Incident at 66.6 FM dealt directly with Public Enemy's stereotyping in the broadcast media. 911 as a joke dealt with law enforcement's allegedly rather selective attitude to servicing black communities in urban parts of America. Sonically, too, it was not quite as much of its time. I think it's aged better than a lot of records from that era. You're talking about the golden age of hip-hop, which kind of is really roughly between about 1987 and about 1992, when you could sample anything. It was before the record companies really got lawyers and said, you sampled one quarter of one bar, you know, you either pay for that or we sue you, we take you to court.
Yeah. Is this about America in the 1990s? Or is this about the evolution of hip-hop that just happened to appear at that time? What I guess what I'm saying is, could this album have occurred in the 60s, assuming all the musical antecedents were in place?
I don't think so. I think in the 60s, people, particularly the black community, were still coming from a more soulful point of view, as evidenced by people like James Brown, Gil Scott-Heron, Curtis Mayfield, Isaac Hayes. This is cat's out of the bag now. There's one way to confront these issues, which is to be as confrontational and more constructive.
Mm. To be a public enemy.
To be a public enemy, exactly. But to me, it's more just the absolute sonic impact of it that is just absolutely riveting.
One of the things I want to pick up there, all these themes come together really in Fight the Power. And you mentioned James Brown, you mentioned the soul history of black resistance, I suppose, or maybe it wasn't resistance, and maybe that's the point that Public Enemy
consciousness made. Certainly,
yeah, but yeah, whatever you want to call it. But Fight the Power, you were just telling me off air, actually begins with James Brown as far as the backing track is concerned. Is that right?
It actually begins with a sample of, I think it's a spoken sample of somebody speaking before a riot or something like that. But the musical backing comes from the instrumental of a James Brown tune called Hot Pants, but it actually comes from the version of Hot Pants performed by his band, the JBs, without him, which is slightly different again, and better, if you ask me.
So we're hearing that now.
You can hear this groove slightly slower, and then what Public Enemy put it through their blender, it's sped up and spat out 1,000 different directions.
All right, well, let's hear the sped up, spat out version, shall we? Fight the Power, we'll go out with that. Jonathan Alley, it's always a joy to have you come in. I've been wanting to do this album for a long time in this segment, so thank you very much for obliging. Great to have you in.
Pleasure.
Jonathan Alley, our correspondent for Histrionics. Enough of JB. Let's go out with Public Enemy's version, Fight the Power, from Fear of a Black Planet.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
How good were those days when hip-hop actually meant something? Yeah, am I right? Vintage. Represent.